Hi, welcome to the Gooder Podcast. I'm your host, Diana Frank. As partner and CMO of Retail Voodoo, an award-winning branding agency, I have met with and worked with some of the most amazing women in the naturals industry, food, beverage, wellness, fitness. And as such, I decided to create the Gooder Podcast to interview these great people and subject matter experts and have them share their insights, expertise, passion, and to help businesses all around the world become gooder. I have a very interesting guest to introduce to you today, Danielle Finkelstein. Danielle is co-founder, right, and president of TOP. Do you prefer the organic project when you talk to people? Or do you prefer TOP?
We kind of say both. We always give the preference first of TOP, the organic project, but then we use it as our
gotcha. Acronym. Okay. And TOP is an organic, eco-friendly period product brand. Danielle was raised in Rhode Island. She graduated from Union College in Schenectady. I love that name, New York. Post-graduation, she moved to New York with her future husband and started her career in fashion retail at Ann Taylor. She went on to become an executive in merchandising roles at Coach, Kate Spade, and Talbots. And then in 2018, after spending 22 years in fashion retail and sitting in the C-suite, she took the best risk of both her professional and personal life and left the corporate world to join, is this your cousin?
Yes, it is.
And it's Thyme Sullivan.
Thyme
Sullivan. Yep. To launch TOP, the organic project. So today we get to welcome Danielle.
Thank you. So excited to be here. Really, really excited to be here and okay. share our story.
Oh, good. How's Rhode Island today? You were in Rhode Island, right?
I am. Yes. I got my husband to move back here 5 years ago. We were in New York. And so it's nice to be home. And it's beautiful out here today. So thank you.
I've been on the East Coast, not to Rhode Island.
Oh, it's a beautiful place to be. Good beaches.
Good beaches. Really? Okay. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't know that. Okay.
Yep. Yep.
So really glad to speak with you today. I think we found each other indirectly by way of Kimberly Lee Miner, a guest I had several weeks ago. She is such an amazing woman using her experience and platform to change the world as we know it in a different way than you, right?
Yes.
Tell us just out of curiosity, how do you guys know each other?
Well, we were babies. We worked together at Ann Taylor. Truly were kids when we were there, but we worked together at Ann Taylor. And crossed over. And I just have so much admiration also for what she is doing, leaving the retail world similar to me and sort of forging her new path and really becoming and changing that conversation around women and people of color in the workplace and really trying to be that voice for change in culture, which I admire what she's doing.
And I've seen her making some really huge strides just in the last few weeks, like really huge movement. Mm-hmm. I'm excited.
I'm so proud of her. Really proud to see it. That's great.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate the time that you and I have already spent together. Now, anybody that has listened to any of my podcasts knows that I like to have a little bit of a coffee clutch, so to speak, before we have a show to kind of get an idea of what's your passion. What is it that you want to talk about? I don't like to speculate about your passion. Yeah. But I want to talk about your brand and your company TOP right now. Maybe you can give us a little bit of that genesis story.
Yes.
Why did you start it?
Yeah. Well, as you shared, you know, I spent 22 years in retail fashion, and I was at a crossroads. Both my cousin and I, who I do the business with, so Thyme and myself, we were both at crossroads in our career. And here we were at this midpoint in our careers. And for Thyme, she spent 27 years in consumer packaged goods. So she really did have the expertise and the experience behind her. But she was at the big guys. So she was at Coke, Nestle, and most recently Nestle, Coke, Pepsi, and Nestle. And for her job had been eliminated. And so she had to make this decision for herself and her family. But she was at that crossroads too, where she never saw her kids. She was on the road all the time. Mm-hmm. And she was just kind of like missing out on like what could be.
Yeah.
And for me, I was similar, 22 years in fashion retail, at the height of my career. It's the job that I dreamed of when I was 24 years old. Like, I'm going to be in that seat. And I would say in that the last couple of years, you know, moving on to Talbots was a great opportunity for me. One, it got me back home to Rhode Island, which was a gift. And I never thought I'd ever end up, you know, quote unquote home. And but it really came down to sort of that last year being part of these large organizations and coming from a place of Kate Spade, which was constantly innovating, ideating. Right. And I was there during a time when there was an openness to taking risk. And we were really we were forging ahead and really moving. When I started at Kate Spade, it was $500 million business. When I left, it was 1.3. And it just grew, exponentially. But what was incredible was the leadership team that I was part of is we were constantly challenging each other to really like go outside of the box, push yourself outside of the box. Mm-hmm. So when I did make that time and make that change to move on to Talbots, and that really was for, so I could move up to move home. It was that last year that I was there that there were a couple of factors for me. I think the biggest piece for me was I kept thinking about, yes, this is the job I always wanted, but I kept thinking about that next job. And was I going to be satisfied? Yeah. Was I going to be, and it's more the next role, having conversations of being groomed for the president. And I kept thinking like, I've done this. Mm-hmm. I lost almost that passion. And I'm one where like, I lead my life with a lot of passion.
Yeah.
And so I had lost that. I lost the learning piece. Mm-hmm. And then on the flip side, on a personal side, I was working around the clock. I was leaving my house every day, 5:30, 6 o'clock, not getting home until 9 o'clock. The weekends were the same, just not being able to be really present for anybody, you know, for myself and for my kids and for my husband, anybody. And it really became that crossroads for me. And where I took the best, as you said, the best risk, both personally and professionally, was I actually walked out.
Oh, you did?
Yes. So I stepped away. I had the conversation and it really came down to, it was actually my husband. And I applaud him for, I was the breadwinner. And it was probably the scariest moment for both of us personally, because it's now this financial burden of like, how are we going to do this? But he was just like, look, this isn't healthy anymore.
Yeah.
And so really the intent was I was going to leave. And I was going to take some time off, recharge, spend time with the family, and really figure out what was going to be that next for me. And I was at this stage that I was like, all right, I'm going to go to a startup. And in my mind, the startup was going to be like a $10, $15 million business.
Yes.
So was ready for sort of that next stage to really be able to grow exponentially. And that is where Thyme and I, our roads just, they crossed at collided. The perfect time. So it was like serendipitous, honestly, that we were able to, the conversation happened over lunch, because we both realized that what was happening to both of us professionally as well as personally wasn't what we wanted for this next stage in our lives or in our careers. And it was finally our time to actually take control of something that was very much out of our control. And so there were factors, and then how we got into the actual product itself was was just that's part of where our lifestyle was. That sparked that.
Well, so what I'm hearing here is interesting, and I don't know if this is my translation of it, but when you were in the retail world, this kind of what is the next job, and Kate Spade's environment of innovation, was it more competitive? Was it kind of like, okay, whoever's going to get the most wins or the best idea or whatever, you know, kind of moves up the food chain? And so it could have been collaborative, but maybe it just ended up driving this more competitive nature rather than this is something that I'm super excited about.
I think those were some of the aspects. I think the bigger piece for me was I was missing from the Kate Spade world. I was missing at, you know, being part of Talbots, which is such an established brand,
right.
And it has an amazing customer. I mean, I'm a customer fanatic.
Yeah.
And it has an amazing customer. But really, like, it just we weren't moving fast enough. We weren't innovating. And I think I wanted to, and being able to bring ideas, and even sitting, you know, I sat on the executive team, and it just, there were times that we just couldn't move as fast. And so I think there was part of that, but I do think also for myself, just learning, you know, when you've spent this much time in one sort of siloed role, and even once you get to the executive role, you're seeing lots of different sides of the business and you're managing and overseeing, but you're still within that one role.
Yeah. And it's like air traffic controlling more than actually rolling up your sleeves.
100%. 100%.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. Well, so now, so we've talked, we've learned a little bit about, you know, why you left the, you know, that world and decided and kind of said, okay, we're going to collide together here. I'm here with my cousin. We've got this great idea. Like what?
So
why,
over lunch,
just over a single lunch.
Over lunch, what happened was, you know, I think there were two things that sort of factors that happened was,
okay,
Thyme was trying to decide what she was going to do. And so she had been seeing, being in the food world, that what was happening in non-GMOs and the push to organic. Yes. And, you know, mm-hmm. we've had all these conversations that, you know, when you look at, you know, your dog food, you know what's in your dog food. And during this lunch, we were talking about our daughters. And so we both grew up with hippie parents. Like we grew up okay. with like hippie lifestyle, hippie parents. I live a very organic lifestyle. My kids, I mean, they have to go to friends' houses to get junk food. And and there are moments where it's like I even sometimes migrate, I got to get them a little bit late or something. But so that's been how my kids have been raised. They still sleep on organic mattresses. And mm-hmm. when we were having these conversations, we both have girls and both have boys. But as we're talking about our girls, and then we talked about ourselves, we never changed our tampons. Mm. We were still using the traditional tampons.
From way back when.
That my mom gave me for the first time, you know, like I was still using what my mother gave me. So if you use that, we hear that phrase all the time when it comes to period products. It's like, you use what your mother gave you.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of truth there. So we both have these girls that were coming of age and we're like, what are we doing? Like, this is something that we're not seeing out there. There had just been one or two brands that had just popped up at that time. So the big guys were not in the game yet. And so really what the conversation though with those new brands that were popping up is they were all talking to millennials. So nobody was talking to me. And nobody was talking to, you know, our preteen daughters.
Right.
So it became this, that was really the aha moment for us was there's an opportunity here. We need this product. We're not finding it on the shelf. And also the product that is out there, again, going back to our lifestyles, there was no eco-friendly option. So everything was still plastic. So we're sitting there, we're like, okay, so there's something here, like where we have the opportunity to actually bring something better for our daughters. Most importantly, what can we do for our girls? As we were talking, I was like, listen, I need time off. Like we are running with this. And because we both at that time didn't have any job and we weren't looking, we just jumped in 300%, like head, feet, body, every part of our soul jumped into this. And so we were able to just dedicate everything to the time to really build it out from that early stage and really, you know, kind of get ourselves into a beta phase and do tons of research and do stuff that also because we had the experience from our previous careers of thinking about how did we want this? Who was truly making sure, like, are we going after them? I mean, we knew we were going after us, but like really fine tuning and finessing that demographic and really thinking about that younger generation and creating the core pillars of our business that we don't stray from. And so we're able to kind of do that in the early stage because we had the time. We weren't being stretched in other places.
Mm-hmm. You know what you say that is interesting, and I think we talked about this last time we were talking, is this Generation Z is so much more open to like all of this stuff. The reason why we behave the same way as our parents, you know, whatever our parents gave us. And it's the same with other types of things that are close to, you know, cleaning supplies. There are these categories that like whatever your parents gave you kind of, you know, I still, you know, predominantly use the same cleaning products that I grew up with because the scent and there's this legacy and a blah, blah, blah. But I'm finding that this younger generation, the younger millennials, not the older ones, and then Gen Z are really talking about products that have traditionally been taboo openly. And just, it's not like, ooh, gross, or like, you don't have any of that. So curious if your daughters fit in Gen Z, or are they a little bit on the younger side, and
Gen
how
Z.
Are those conversations? Yeah.
So it is, she's 14 and my daughter, she's 10, uh-huh. but we have all of these conversations. Uh-huh. And for both of them, you know, what we're seeing is the openness.
Mm-hmm.
And look, they're living with us also, that this is what we do.
Welfare.
But when we've done these focus groups and even having these conversations with it, and I really look at the Gen Z, and we've been fortunate enough, and I can share a little bit later, is that we've really also tapped into this young college student as well. And so we're having conversations with them, and their openness, and they're pushing the conversation, they're pushing the envelope even more. And it's not about the you know, some, because it's been taboo, and it's, yes, it's a period, and everyone's like, oh, I can't. They're pushing it more because they want their peers to know, they want the guys to know. And we're seeing that amongst this younger generation too, and even like with our daughters, and they're not afraid. And I think, one, it starts and stems from us. You know, we owe it to our kids, and we both live in these households now that like our dining room tables are covered in tampons and pads. That's like, if you're coming over for anything, like you're going to have to, not that we're all having dinner parties right now, but if you're coming over, that's what's going to be in our dining room. I think you're bringing up such a great part of what we hope to do, and what our mission is to start to change the narrative. And we have to change the narrative with, as moms and as our generation, with this younger generation, starting young when they get their first period. But even more so, we have to start with the boys as well. And how important that we can bring them into this part of the conversation. Because that's, if we can start with them too, and not make it so separate, that they then see that this isn't this thing that is, you know, done. Yes, it is done behind closed doors, but that it isn't, this is part of half the population and a lot of the people that they interact with. And so it's a natural part of our body. And, you know, listen, boys and girls can talk about pee and poop all the time. Like, it's silly. Yeah. Like that's what, like, it should be just as natural as that.
I think, you know, it's just, I think this, it stems from us. I think we have to give a little bit of credibility to ourselves as parents, because the fathers, you know, we've changed, we want to make a change, and we're also enrolling the other, you know, other family members into these conversations. So the fact that they're open to hearing the conversation has to do partly with that we've created environments that are safe for them to be open. So that transition is kind of like in that older millennials, Gen X, you know, we're trying to make some rapid changes in that area. Now, I'm curious, you started this with your cousin Thyme.
Yes.
Was that a critical component? Do you think this brand would exist if you guys had just not,
it wouldn't exist,
collided on the big idea?
It wouldn't exist. And I'd say multiple things about, listen, Thyme, I am so fortunate every single day and grateful. And I tell her, and we tell each other, one, being an entrepreneur, it is lonely.
It is.
And it's, you're dealing with so many different things all the time. And it is a roller coaster. There is no straight line.
Yeah.
And so you're going to take two steps forward, and you're going to take five steps back, and you're going to have your bad days. And I think the most important thing, one, it's trust. So trust her more than anything. We can have honest conversations, the good and the bad conversations, about what we need to do.
Yes.
We are so lockstep. I mean, we laugh all the time. We're like, oh my God, we have the same brain, but we're in two different bodies. And just lockstep on where our ideas are. And look, when you need to lean on somebody, and when you are upset, or when you're frustrated, or when you like are on the ground and you need somebody to like pick you back up, we do that for each other. And so I do look at, like, you know, some of the single founders, and one, I admire them because I can't imagine not having her by my side. And the other part too is like, I have so much fun with her. We laugh so much. And honestly, I think that's the piece of like why we keep fueling this as well. It's like, work should be fun. My old work, like for the most part, I made it fun. I tried every day, but like, it's so different now that we own it, and it is ours. We make it fun. The laughter, even in the bad moments, we just like laugh through sometimes, because it's like, all right, we're either gonna laugh or we're gonna cry. So like, and so I think I am thankful that I'm doing it with her, because as an entrepreneur, this is a lonely ride. And, you know, as you start to just from the early stages, you know, again, coming from a large corporation, having 100 people underneath me, having all, you know, my executive team around me. And here it is, it's the two of us. And we're just starting to hire people, which is super exciting.
Oh, that's really fun.
And so it's, you know, but that is, we say it all the time, we could not do it without each other.
That's really fantastic, because you're right. There's mostly single founder owners, or they have a core group that surrounds them, but co-founders are kind of there's a special bond there. And I think it's great that you have that. When I think about, you know, you've got you're coming from though this high-end luxury type of product to a very functional product, you know, period care, personal care, very intimate. You have to get really intimate in your conversation in a completely different way. Do you see, first of all, there's two ways you could answer this, but from like a leadership standpoint, right? Do you see how much of what you that you had as part of your leadership toolkit at retail did you bring over, and how much of it got thrown out because it's either irrelevant or inappropriate for your situation?
Yeah, it's a great question, honestly. And I love this question, because neither one of us built what today if it hadn't been for our old toolkit.
Sure. Okay.
But we had to throw a shitload out.
Okay.
And so for me, what the toolkit that I was able to bring was, in a merchandising role, you are dealing with, you know, six different seasons. Again, you've got this huge management team that you're dealing with. So you've in all these different categories. And, you know, when you're overseeing it all, you have 100 balls in the air. Mm-hmm. And as an entrepreneur, you have 100 balls in the air.
Yes, you do.
And so it is constantly like, I am able to navigate that piece, which that's just a skill that I was able to bring over, not necessarily the, you know, retail fashion handbags versus now being in tampons, which is, they're very different, a necessity versus nice to have.
Yes.
So I was able to really lean into that part of where my success has been able to manage many different things at many different times and finding the priorities of where we needed to be, and also being very strategic as well. And so that's a very big strength of like thinking right now in the moment, and also going from, you know, deep down and then jumping up and being very high level again. Mm-hmm. And so that was great. But what we had to do in our first year was also constantly strip away the, I don't want to call them bad behaviors, but there were behaviors that we had that they weren't the risk-taking behaviors. They weren't the, let's do this outside of the box. Let's do this differently. And it took us time to realize that and to recognize that, because that was where our comfort was. And that's what we knew. That's what we had.
Yeah.
And really, it was like a turning point for us. It was last August where it clicked for both of us. And it really was. It was exactly 1 year when we, like, that click happened, that we still lean into so many of where our baseline skills were, but we are thinking differently. We're doing things differently as entrepreneurs. And so I think it's the benefit of where we were coming from. In some ways, we, you know, God, if we knew, we wished we'd move faster, but but we wouldn't have learned. And I think that's the piece that we've been able to learn and say, okay, you know what, we got to get rid of that old thinking. Like, we can't go that way. We got to go this way. Mm-hmm. And so that's actually been it's been good. It's been good on both sides.
Yeah. Well, I think of one of the stories, and you've shared this in other type of public forums, other podcasts as well, but the 100 things is like, yes, you would expect that. Like, I think that's part of your DNA. When you are a leader, you're comfortable with that. Otherwise you don't grow into that type of role. But the types of things that you're doing is a little bit more risk management. When you are at the size of a Talbot's, there's as much risk management as there is with innovation. So your innovation is a little bit shackled, because you always have to go, well, what's the worst could happen in this scenario? Where you guys are now, what's the worst that could happen? you're all, you know, especially in those very early days.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's like, well, the worst that could happen is nothing, because there's not a whole lot. So maybe a little bit liberating. And I'm thinking about even like running around town as a giant tampon. Why not? You know, things that you would not get, like, excuse me while I put my earbud back in, but things that you would not necessarily do at a Talbot's. So, and that's also part of that, like, the part of you guys having some fun. And is it that risk management component, or the risk management component that's kind of been shed, that is the really the liberating part?
Yes, that's been probably the biggest piece for us. And honestly, a year ago, I mean, we almost had to shutter the business. And one of the reasons, and this was because at the core of our values, number one was transparency. So getting organic product. Yeah. Number two was the environmental piece. And so what can we do to, be a positive impact on the environment versus a negative impact? And the third was, which we can get to later, is around period poverty. But that second one, so that second one, though, around the environment, was we started out with a cardboard applicator, and we're like, we're going to change everybody. They're all going to go. Everyone's drinking from their steel straws, and like everyone has their recyclable bags, and they have their water bottles, and like everyone's going to change. They're not going to use plastic applicators anymore. They're not going to use plastic on their pads. Oh, we were so wrong.
Oh.
but it was good in the sense that we, in a large company, we would have jumped right to plastic applicators because you had to move fast.
You had to move fast.
So for us, yes, we were, here's a place that we were not right, that there was like, that we were going to be able to change people to all move to cardboard. Mm-hmm. But what happened was we wanted to do research to make sure that we could then find, because we could have jumped right into plastic. And we're like, that goes against our core value. Like we can't change our core value. We could, but we didn't want to. And we had such a strong belief around that. And so it took us time to then have to do the research to actually find a plant-based applicator.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And so that became the piece. And so it was, I mean, we launched the business January of 2000, like officially, like we did all our research and everything. It did like a lot of customers, but January of 2019, and the plant-based didn't come in until January of 2001. And it has been a game changer for us.
Really?
The customer response, the funny thing is actually on Amazon, our cardboard is amazing, which is like, okay, it's fine. But the plant-based, because it's the innovation that's happening. But that is where the place of like in a large company, going back to your question, is we never would have done that. We would have gone right to plastic, and we would have said, okay, you know, we'll get there at some point, and we'll still get back to our what our core value is. And we stood strong, and we didn't want to waver from what was important to us.
Yes. Yeah. There's a lot of things that, you know, that go into the decisions of a bit much bigger organization and scalability of manufacturing, supplies, cost, you know, this is 3 cents less. I mean, all of those decisions go into it, and there's some flexibility when you're a young brand like Top to be able to play around with those things and kind of hold your values and build a brand on values, because then you can, then the brand can learn and the industry can scale with you.
Yes.
Instead of like Playtex going, there's just no way that we can manufacture a kajillion of these things and be profitable or whatever, pass the cost on, or all of that, all of those things. So I know it's not always like these guys are the bad guys. There's a lot of considerations in there, but you're liberated from that at the size that you're at.
So
I kind of want to go back to the brand and the products a little bit. So I didn't even really ask you at the very beginning, but like when you were describing Top to a retailer or a merchandiser, a distributor, like what do you lead with? Who are you, and why do you want them to care about you? Why should they care about you? Why should they know that consumers care about you?
Yeah. Well, and I think this has been a category that has lacked innovation for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
And what's been exciting to see is that over the last 3 to 5 years, you're starting to see this happen.
Yeah.
And I think at the core of this is, this is a I don't love the word feminine care or feminine hygiene. Dated.
So I
at the core of this category, so period products, it's for women. Mm-hmm. You know, it's for, or it's for people who are menstruating.
Yeah.
So if we go to that conversation, this should be done by women.
Yes.
And so I think there's a huge part, which we're actually excited to see that's happening on the retail front and happening in large retailers, is that they are increasing and they're looking for women owned. And it's not just in our category, it's across the board, but there's this increase and this recognition of women owned as well as minority based businesses.
Sure,
and so that's a great thing that we bring, but we're also bringing innovation to a category that has not been innovated. Mm-hmm. It's about that transparency piece. So going back to like our three pillars have become really important to these retailers because it is about transparency. Again, going back to, you know what's in your dog food, you know what's in ketchup, you don't know what's in your period products.
Come on,
like
exactly.
It is going inside of our bodies. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think what we're seeing and you're hearing more and more is that there's the tagline that so many folks are using is better for you. And so retailers are recognizing that, and that they owe this conversation to their consumers. And so that's one piece. And then there's this environmental piece. So they are looking for the sustainability, you know, conversation and how can they, you know, change their impact to the environment as well. And then there's a large component on give backs. So the social impact that companies can do as well. And so that is a large, you know, factor in what we do every single day as well. So, you know, as we're having these conversations with retailers, that, you know, our sort of talking points is, you know, or we're a women-owned business bringing plant-based and organic to period products. Like that's, you know, that's our first statement we say to them.
Nice.
And changing that narrative, you know, and a large part of changing the narrative is because Thaim is famous for her tampon costume. And so that's done it. And so the best part is, honestly, though, is like, you know, with the retailers, like they see in like our deck to them, like, we have a picture of the two of us and here we are. And like, we went to a, it was a women's march and we were in the tampon costumes together. And it was about changing the conversation. It's the minute that it does. It also breaks down that barrier. Cause it's like, you know, you go up to anybody and you're like, hey, talk to me about your period. And they're like, Whoa, what are we talking about, right? Who are you? But when you show up in a tampon, they're like, that's funny. You know what? Yes, I can talk about this now. And so it breaks down and it brings some levity to the conversation. I think that's the piece too, is that this is such a taboo topic that if you can bring just a little bit of levity, like I actually, one of the brands that I think has done a good job with that is Poopery. So, you know, listen, we're all going to the bathroom. Like this is a natural part of what we do. And look, she's making it funny, like make it funny. And that's, you know, the more that we can do that and change that dialogue, you know, that's what we're hoping we can do as well.
Yeah. And you know, that it's also, there's an approachability component around it. Like being dressed as a tampon isn't as crass as there's some of the newer, younger brands in this space are a little bit crass and potty mouth and, or potty humor, which is fine. You can't, not everybody can be that, but it's a desire to be approachable. And so, I can applaud them. And I know as all young brands, as they mature, they kind of start to go, oh, well, that worked great when we had 1500 customers, but if we want to be a $1 billion brand, we probably need to grow up a little bit. And so you watch as that category changes, but then I'm looking at them and then I'm like, want to go, okay, we've got these big guys. And, you know, part of what you and I talked about is this kind of in this natural space and kind of breaking down this barriers of only upper middle class white people are defining this naturals and better for you category. And my job, I've already called it my job. My goal with this podcast is to bring women on here who are going to help cross the barriers from the people who are being ignored and not spoken to based off of some assumptions and start to break down those barriers. You guys are clearly doing something because you got the big guy, Tampax and OB are making big strides. So clearly you guys have brought up something, they've seen an opportunity, they figured out how to scale a version of what you're doing.
Yep.
But you guys have the leverage of not having this legacy of this brand. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, when you're having these conversations with retailers and buyers, how are they, do you come in the door and are they comparing you to them, to the legacy brands?
No.
Or what, how's it show up in your conversation? Yeah.
They're not necessarily, so, you know, look, the legacy brands, they're there, they are there, and it's with every single category.
Sure.
And what becomes different is that, and some people may migrate, some consumers may migrate over to one of their natural products, but they're still also, particularly with this Gen Z, they're questioning, but why did you make that had all that stuff in it? And now you're giving me this. So there's a lot of, like, we've heard this many times with, as we've been having conversations with a lot of our Gen Z folks, is, well, I wouldn't go to one of their natural parts because why were they doing this for so many years? Why was there a chemical
there?
Yes. So that's actually exactly what I was just about to say.
Oh, sorry.
You know, it's great. No, thank you. The trust level, which is so important for that Gen Z, is that that's the piece that we're bringing. We're bringing the honest conversation. We're being fully transparent. They want transparency. And so it is that education piece. And even for the big retailers and talking to the buyers, they are looking for innovation. So they know the innovation also comes from, and where the different thinking comes from, are brands like ours. You're not necessarily going to get it from these big brands. Like, they're how they spend their marketing dollars and what they're going to do. And some of them, like, there's little hits here and there. It's coming from this rise below. And it's, you see it in every industry that's out there right now. And so it's fascinating to watch, you know, we're just one of those other categories, but it's fascinating to watch these smaller brands that are changing the conversation, that are bringing innovation, and really to the big guys out there, they are so big. It goes back to my conversation of Talbots. You're so big that you can't always innovate. You can't afford to. And so it is, you know, it's a tough balance right now. Honestly, we need them. You know, we need the big guys, but we also need to, we need to push them. So to make space for ourselves.
Interesting. Well, so along this route here, and you can even, you'll start to see, I'll get a little anxious about it myself, but I've got a tricky question. You use the term period poverty, and this is really this next question that I prepped is really what you're talking about. This kind of outside of the US, when people think of period poverty, which means, you know, girls don't go to school after they stop, either because it's a taboo as part of a cultural or a religious aspect, or they're, they can't afford products in general. Here in the US, we have the same thing, but we see, we've got arguments around taxing around products, which seems ridiculous to me.
Bananas.
But there are women in the US that have, like, limited access to products. They are still not being educated. I think of a lot of kids that are growing up, or girls that are growing up in poverty or in very conservative parts of the United States, or families where the topic is not discussed or it's considered bad. They're not getting any information about their bodies or these products. And so they're being relegated to whatever is accessible or to nothing at all, or reusing products, stuff like that. How does a brand like yours, it's small, right? I get it. And so your impact is small right now. But how do you guys handle that big giant ball of mess?
So it's an enormous piece, and there's many different factors. And so kind of breaking it down into two, I think one is there's the accessibility piece. And so, yes, your point, 1 in 5 women and girls here in the United States experience period of poverty. And since Corona, it's significantly worse. Oh, it's gotten significantly worse. And you hear in certain cities that it's like 1 in 3 and, you know, just, and because you have families deciding, like, they can't pay their rent, they've got to decide between food. And then so they're, and the other big part is a lot of kids aren't at school. So if they are in school, some schools have been providing feminine care. And so you have all these different factors that are happening. So right now what you are seeing, you know, before COVID, it was 1 in 5 women and girls. And so when you think about that, at the end of the day, when we as, and I'm talking to another, you know, another female is,
yes,
we talk about female equality and equity, women will not be able to get ahead if we can't figure out how to remove this barrier from women's lives and to fulfill this basic necessity that's part of what happens to us naturally. And so I think that that's a really, really important piece is that, you know, for us, we are small. So our impact, you know, we wish it could be grand, and that's our vision of like where our future is.
Awesome.
Is
yes,
it can be, but you know, but for every purchase, you know, we do a donation.
Excellent, a give and back. Yeah.
So we do have that, but that's only part of it.
Yeah.
So that's one piece. The other piece is, and this is where I do really like, I look to wish that the bigger brands would do more around this. And there's two couple of factors. There's the tampon tax. So 30 states still tax tampons. So you've got condoms that aren't taxed. You have Viagra that's not taxed. You've got Doritos, whatever else. Yeah. It's not taxed. Teeth whitening, not taxed.
Yeah.
But tampons are taxed. In food stamps, don't cover feminine care.
That to me seems absolutely
asinine. Insane.
Yeah.
It's insane. So you've got some of these key factors that, and this is where the power behind these big brands, they could move it.
Yeah.
They could get those taxes removed. They could actually get some of this legislation changed. And that, so we have small brands like ours that are trying to do what we can to raise our voices and to come together as like more of a, you know, and one of the brands that I admire so much is Beauty Counter.
Oh.
And they've almost created this, and they're on the beauty side, totally different, but they've almost created this coalition of other beauty brands to raise their voices to change the legislation on the transparency of the Cosmetics Act.
Yeah.
And so similar to this, like what I hope that we can do, and you know, we're still young and in our infancy, but like how we can start to really partner with some of these other brands to start to really push this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
To then be able to give access to these women who don't have it. And to your point around the education, this is the hardest part because there still are so many people who aren't educated around even just the basics of feminine care and what they need to take care of themselves. Because this is such a critical part is if we can start to teach young women about the importance of just it and look, if they can't afford it is quote unquote a privilege on the organic side. But most important is that these young women can have access just to something that will keep them safe.
Yes.
Because then they understand the importance of their own health. And we can teach these young women and give them some of those tools to start taking some control of their health that early on is super important. And that just then continues to grow. And so it's a big question. It is a hard one. You know, and when you're a consumer brand, and not a nonprofit, and you know, there are moments where like we were sometimes like, especially when COVID hit, we leaned in, we donated significantly more than what we sold because it was the natural part to us was like, this is part of our core goal. This is going to come back to us. We don't need to worry. Like we're going to be fine, but we donated more because that was what was needed. And we wouldn't have done it any differently. But it is this balance that we constantly have to have is like, how much time do we put into this side, as well as trying to still build the brand.
Well, so. You can't do the good work unless you're profitable. Right. So that's what I have to tell people, even people who come to us and go, can you do it for $5? It's like, well, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is then we can't do these other things that we have set out to do as being, well, for us, we're a B Corp. So we have some personal mandates that we've committed to. And so, you know, just like you still have to be profitable. Your machine needs to be running. You have to have your efficiency. So it's a balance, right? But I think when you can get out and have and get your message out through platforms like this and through your good works, then we can continue to have that care. I love it. I wonder, I really wish that brands like you could partner with somebody like American Girl. American Girl, by the way, has the best book. Book that I gave to my daughter. I wish I could give to every girl.
It's incredible.
At age 9. And then I wish American Girl would partner up with brands like yours.
Well, and it's to your point, I was actually going to say is it is, whether it's brands like that, or it's really about how do we get into more of these organizations like a Girls Inc. Girl Scout, even Girl Scouts, like these Girl are Scouts. Where girls are going that, you know, this is an opportunity is to start to take those moments and educate them, because in the classroom with school nurses, they're still, you mean still in some places, they're not even talking about this.
No, because they have, all of the political and religious crap that schools have to try to negotiate.
And so
they
say, so it's difficult.
They're muzzled. They can't say anything because if they, you know, so we have to find other avenues. I have a movie that was done by an independent filmmaker here in the Northwest about this topic. Ooh. I don't know why I didn't think about this before, but I'm going to send it to you and what introduce is it? You
yes,
to this
please
woman.
Do.
It's about a girl's first period, and she's living with her dad because her mother had died, and he didn't know how to help her. And here she is in the 70s. And it was shown to my daughter's Girl Scout troop. That's why I was like, made that connection there.
Oh my God. Yes, please.
I'm going to send it to you. You're going to love this filmmaker. So I digress.
That's fine. Actually, I'm usually like, there's like 10 different things like happening.
Yeah, oh my goodness. Well, our time is almost up, but I have a few questions that I always like to ask all of my guests. And that is, and so I'm going to remove that term feminine hygiene care.
Period products.
What do you call it?
Yes.
Do you call it, you just period call it products. Period products.
Yep.
Okay. Great. And are period products under personal care, or are they alongside personal care?
Oh, they are personal care.
Okay. Well, it depends on how you you want to slice and dice it. We'll go on Nielsen and start putting charts and graphs all
over
again.
Yeah.
Nielsen, just if you haven't got your hands on the latest Nielsen report about these products, we're working on a related category to period products. And we have Nielsen report that just came out. You might want to get your hands on. There's really interesting.
That's good.
That's all I'm just going to say.
All right.
A little plug there for Nielsen. I'll be taking write a check.
Write the commission to you.
Yeah. But tell me a little bit, who do you got your eye on? And you talked about poo-pourri, but let's
That's just for funny.
Who do you got your eye on? Who is doing either the work on the ground or innovative or whatever, however you want to slice and dice it?
There's two brands. So already mentioned Beauty Counter. So we were very lucky early on to partner with Beauty Counter. And so for folks that don't know who they really are changing the way that beauty is looked at. And it's like the clean revolution around beauty. They are changing the conversation. It's really not about fear mongering, but it's about making you aware of the ingredients that have been in traditional beauty products, and beyond just beauty products, like skincare, it's your hair care, everything, and bringing transparency to it. And so their commitment to transparency, quality, advocacy, were all factors that when we started, like they were our role model. What Greg Renfrew is building is truly what we see the future of like feminine care. So what's been awesome for us is that early on, and they were the one, here's me going back to all my years of brand, is finding strong brand partnerships. Who do you align with? Like who do you find value that has the same taste? And that one. So spend like nights to be on the couch and like search through, and it's just social media, like digging into their influencers and all of their, they have 60,000 beauty ladies out there. And so they're all sort of, they're these zealots. Majority of them are moms. And so it's like spot on to who we were kind of talking to. Their demo runs just a slightly younger, younger woman, more actually in the cusp of the millennial. But they are zealots for clean products. And so what they were building just aligned with what we were doing. And so we were able to partner with them really early on. And what's great is that now they have this clean guide that they have about 25 brands on there, and we've been selected as their feminine care. So they have likes of Patagonia to Allbirds to, it's a whole slew of like these amazing, amazing brands. And, you know, for us, like it was just such a proud moment. Like here we are, we're still small, but they have recognized us as doing, again, the transparency, the innovation, the quality. And that's where that's what's been important. So they're definitely one. And then one who is totally different, it's in the food space, but Kali Power. It's run by CEO Gail Becker, and we have admired what she's done too. It's taking a conversation One, she was inspired by her kids. And so here, you know, we have that same, you know, where our inspiration came from, were our girls, and her boys, and she has transformed the frozen food section. I mean, sure. It blows our mind. I mean, we're huge fans and she's doing it with humor. She's doing it with happiness. And those are when we think of those brands that we can connect to, and emotional connection to brands is so big. And that also then goes back to where I grew up is how do you make that emotional connection to your customer, to your, you know, to the person who's purchasing. And I think she's done a great job of that. And it's just funny. Like they come up with really there's the taglines. Yes. And so how can we learn from a brand like that? Yeah. So taking a different category. So, you know, I think that the two of those, they're very different. One truly being in the beauty space, and the other being a food, but I think that they're changing the way the conversations are being had in different ways.
I always find it interesting who my guests are inspired by. So thank you for that. Yeah. Tell us, is there any, I mean, we've dropped some interesting facts and factoids throughout this thing, but is there any little piece of nugget that you're like, oh, this is something that nobody would ever know about either an industry or a product that you would like to share today?
Key fact is going to the environmental piece.
Okay.
20 billion period products end up in landfills every single year. In the United States.
Oh my goodness.
So that's just in the United States. So again, when we talk about the steel straws and everyone's talking about their straws and we got to stop doing this and that. Yes. Period products are a significant contributor to plastic waste. And so that's just another piece too is, you know, look, we are right now single use. We're still in single use. Whereas, you know, there's the cups and the underwear and there's other categories that are definitely coming in. That's amazing innovation.
Yes.
There still is 85% of the consumers, actually almost 90% of the consumers, are still using single use. So if we can make strides in the single use that is happening and bring innovation and sustainability and just products that are better for the environment, that's the piece that's been very, very important. So being plant-based and being, you know, where we're produced and where our cotton comes from. And so all of those aspects just were really, really important to us.
Yeah. Wow. And it's not like straws. Straws is a choice. Well, for disabled people, that's not true. But for the rest of the planet, which is a good majority of us, straws are a choice.
Yeah.
So these products, not so much.
No.
So that's a good, good factoid there.
20 billion.
Billion. Okay. How are you keeping yourself sane and centered these days? And this for you, this question is a little bit different than most other people because you are trying to grow this baby, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
What do you do for yourself?
So for me, honestly, you know, two kids, both working parents. I actually, it's very basic. It's very simple. Every single morning, I write down what I'm grateful for. And really almost I set my intentions. I think about what my day is going to be and just really try to approach my day in a positive way. And it is really I set it down and, I've got this amazing book that it's every day it just talks about, it gives you, it's it runs on a 365 days. And every day I read one of the quotes that's in there and it sets the tone for my day. And it is so simple, because, you know, there's the food and there's the exercise and there's all those other pieces and spending a lot of time with my family. But it sets my tone. And I am, and I think through all of this, probably the hardest thing is when you're a total people person and you really build your energy off of people, and that is totally me.
That's me too,
it's just reminding myself of okay, we're going to get there. And I spend so much time, my thyme always laughs, no matter what. I'm we're on Zoom. I don't care. I don't care if you haven't showered. I don't care. I need to see a human on the other side. I don't need to talk on a phone. And so, you know, I think those are the pieces. Definitely looking forward to when this is done. But there's been some good things. You know, I think just the time with family that we wouldn't have had in the past, and especially during the summer. My kids usually go to sleepaway camp, and we had a lot of family time. And you know, they may grumble about it, but you know, it's for me. I that's just, it was a gift of time because I would never would have had that time with them. Mm-hmm. So,
Tell us, before we end here, if people want to connect with you, what's the best way? Is it LinkedIn? Yeah. Do you have an email address?
LinkedIn is the best. I am a big believer. One of my sort of quotes that I've lived my life with is my network is my net worth. Mm-hmm. And I love to connect. I always respond when somebody, you know, reaches out and
this
always
the truth.
To, like help. Yes. But seriously, always and in any way that I can, you know, even through all this stuff that's been happening for folks is, you know, if there's somebody out there, and honestly, it's what's been part of our success for what we're doing today. Mm-hmm. We lean into our network every single day. And so fortunate for, you know, the doors that they can open or the advice that they can give or whatever it is. And so if I can always pay it forward, that is what I do every time that I can do that. So yes, please LinkedIn. It's Danielle Finkelstein on LinkedIn. And I'd be happy to just connect in any way. You know, this is a time for women in particular, you know, especially as an entrepreneur that, you know, just I'm reading every day. I feel like there's another article about just the struggles that women are having at this time. Yes. And so many women are falling out of the workforce.
Yes.
And
80% who've opted out of work have been women.
Yeah, it is. It's like, it's heartbreaking to actually see this because the strides that we have made over the years. Mm-hmm. But if I can be a sounding board for a woman who might have an idea for starting her own business and between Thyme and myself, like we'd be more than happy to do whatever we can. You know, I think the big thing that we're also seeing too is that even as female entrepreneurs, the money that's coming for fundraising and investing is getting smaller and dwindling and more. I mean, I think they just said that the Q3 was down 80% for female investments.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So that's another place. Like if somebody does know somebody, like reach out to us. That's one thing that we're in the process of. But yes, I'm any way to connect. I'd be more than happy. And I know Thyme would as well.
Okay. And those that are listening, Danielle is spelled differently than you might
think. Yes, it is.
It's
yes.
D-E-N-I-E-L-L-E.
Yes. E.
And then last name, Finkelstein.
Yep.
Got
Finkelstein.
It. F-I-N-K-E-L-S-T-E-I-N.
Yes.
I took German. I want to keep switching those vowels on.
Yeah. No, that's good. Well,
Well, thank you so very much for your time today. And thank you for the work that you are doing. I know when you're small, it's all encompassing and it's overwhelming and it's fun too. You wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't. And you feel like your impact isn't there, but you've got your eye on the prize. And I know that as you guys grow, your impact is going to be exponential, particularly for those with the greatest need. So thank you so much for that.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for letting us, you know, for me to share our story and how we're building it. And, if it spark somebody with a new idea or just be part of, you know, some advice that somebody's taking. We are podcasts, like we are diehard podcasters. We love, we listen to them.
Great.
And so we've learned so much. And so to be able to share, you know, as well, it's great to be able to give back that way.
Excellent. Okay. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
All right. This episode is sponsored by Retail Voodoo, a creative marketing firm specializing in growing, fixing, and reinventing brands in the food, beverage, wellness, and fitness industries. If your naturals brand is in need of positioning, package design, or marketing activation, we're here to help. You can find more information at retail-voodoo.com. And so there you go. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. And if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to this channel and share with your network. Until next time, be well and do gooder.